But we're going to be picking up in James chapter 1, verse 13. But before we do that, we'll look back just a little bit and remember what is going on in James, what James is talking about, kind of the theme that we're pulling from the book, as well as what we've already covered, because it's going to be important for this section to recognize how James started the book. So, in chapter 1, in the beginning, whenever we see that James is writing it, we see that it's being written to these 12 tribes that are dispersed, these Jewish Christians that have been very likely pushed out of their homes because of persecution. And he says, count it all joy when what happens to you?
Various trials, right.
And so, of course, their persecution would have been the various trials that they were dealing with. But why are various trials a good thing?
They produce endurance.
Right, they produce endurance. And then endurance has its perfect result, that it makes us complete, right? So let me go ahead and put this PowerPoint up just to make sure that I can actually share my screen as well. But we have to look at trials with a different perspective, knowing that those trials produce endurance, and endurance makes us better. It makes us stronger. It makes us more complete, so that we can be more like Christ in our everyday life. And so, instead of looking at them as a terrible situation that we don't want to deal with, but for some reason we have to deal with, we should look at them as the opportunity that they are to create endurance, create a more complete Christian, so that we can be more like Christ in the way that we walk. So that being said, that wisdom is different than the wisdom that we see around us. And so that leads us to kind of the theme that we've been using for James, which comes from which section in James?
3:15.
Right. Which is the difference of two wisdoms. And what are those two wisdoms? Okay, so heavenly and earthly. Right? Earthly is based on our desire, our emotion, the things that we want to do, as opposed to the wisdom of God, which is given as a direction and also a standard by which we are to live. And that standard looks so different from the world because it's a completely different wisdom. It's a wisdom that when we get into the text today, we're going to see a difference of those two minds. And it's specifically a difference of those two minds as it pertains to temptation. If we're thinking about what's going on here in James, and we start thinking about, okay, so we have trials that we deal with, and as we see, like when we looked at Hebrews 11, verse 17, where it talks about that God tested Abraham when he asked him to offer up Isaac, we also can go back and read where it says God tested the people in the wilderness. God has tested many times those whom he loves. And it's not for the sake of bringing about a temptation, but instead God is testing so that we can have endurance and so that we can be made more perfect, more complete. I think we talked about last time that athletes test themselves so that they can grow, so that they can become faster or stronger or better. We test in school because we want to know where we are and where we can do better. We want to be able to push ourselves forward by having something that pushes against us. That's the only way that growth ever really happens. So that testing is something that's going to be around us. Those trials will be around us frequently in this life. But oftentimes what we think about is, well, that just means that I'm tempted to do the wrong thing. And if I have that mentality, then I might come to some improper conclusions when thinking about trials and thinking about temptations. So that's not supposed to do that. Where does the whole night make me go? lost every single animation. This is counting it all joy right now. And we are going to endure this. So I have a awesome, lovely, and beautiful wife who's going to reanimate my PowerPoint for me while I'm teaching this class, and then I'm going to put it back up. So I am counting it all joy that the trials help me to recognize that there are other people that can help me do things that sometimes I'm not really great at. Okay, so somebody, if you would, please read verses 13. Let's see. Now I don't even have the text up, so let me jump it there as well. Good thing I have a Bible as well. Counting it all joy that I have a Bible. All right, we're learning a lot just through the trials of the class right now. All right, let's start and just read verse 13, if somebody would, of James 1.
Who is wise in James 1?
Yes, James 1, verse 13.
Oh, okay. When tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone, but each person is tempted.
Let's just read 13 for now.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Stop at verse 13 for now. Okay, so what is James recognizing might be the mentality of somebody that's going through a trial or going through a difficulty, whenever they come upon that, what's the temptation for a person to do?
Blame God for it.
Right, to blame God, okay? And is this a new thing? Is this something that is kind of a 21st century or even a first century thing that James is dealing with?
No.
Adam used it.
Right. Adam used it. Okay. How did Adam use it?
He blamed God for the woman for creating Eve and getting him in his trouble.
So. Right. So Adam actually blamed God by saying the circumstances you put me in by giving me this woman. And if we think back, it's the temptation that comes about in the beginning of Genesis, where we see that the serpent tempts Eve. Eve takes, eats, gives to her husband. Adam, he eats. God says, "Why have you done this?" And Adam doesn't say, "I knew it was wrong, and yet I did it." Instead, he says, "Well, God, you gave me this woman, and she gave me the food, and I ate it." So Adam, by saying, "This God, the situation that you put me in tempted me and caused me to sin," Adam is saying that God is the one that did it. But verse 13 here says that that is not possible. Why is that not possible?
God's our creator.
So God really has no part in temptation, okay? God does not respond to evil. He does not take part in evil. He does not answer to evil. And therefore, he himself is not the one that tempts anyone. So really tempted to go to the next slide because I'm trying to keep my thoughts in order and I don't have it printed out right now.
Rob, today many people say, "Well, God just made me this way."
Right.
And they sin. They blame God.
Right. And if we were to go back to Genesis chapter 1 and see everything that God made, after he made each and everything, after every day, what did God look back and say about what he made?
It was good.
It was good, okay? So we see that God's creation was all good, and the things that God made were good, and God himself is good. There is not something coming out of God that is evil, including temptations. A incorrect usage of what we have in this world is not because God made us do it. It's not because God caused us to do it. In Ecclesiastes chapter 7, Solomon is looking through everything that he could, everything that he has done in his life, everything he's done in his life, and he comes to a conclusion based on what he has seen around him. Remember, this is Solomon who God gave this great wisdom to. And Solomon puts that wisdom to the test by doing all sorts of things, many things which are not good, many things which are wrong. And as Solomon goes through these things, he realizes, well, this is futile, this is vain, this is worthless. I'm just grasping after the wind, which I cannot have. And as he looks through these things that he's doing, and these things that he desires and puts his hand to and takes, he comes to this recognition in verse 29 of chapter 7, which says, I have found this, that God has made men upright, but they have sought out many devices. So Solomon comes to the same conclusion that God is stating here through James in James chapter 1, that God is not evil. God has not created evil. In fact, God did not make man evil. He did not give man a heart of evil or push man into evil. But instead, God made man upright. How did evil come into the world?
Through sin.
Okay, through sin. And how did that sin come into the world? Right, through our own desires, through man's desire and an incorrect use of what God has given, is how sin entered into the world. Okay, I think I have my PowerPoint, so we're going to pull that down real quick and put it up there as well. Okay, so but in the meantime, I think we'll go ahead and move on to the next few verses. So if somebody would please read verses 14 and 15 of James.
But each one is tempted when he is carried away and enticed by his own lust. Then when lust is conceived, it gives birth to sin. And when sin is accomplished, it brings forth death.
All right. Okay, so really, really going to need PowerPoint for this one. So give me 1 second. But it has already been mentioned. So where did we see that we go wrong?
Well, we tempted and drawn away from God.
It's our own desires being enticed by them.
Right. So God through James again is saying, God is saying, now my computer wants to restart. God is saying that it's not him, it's not his actions that are causing us to sin. That is our own desires, when we are carried away by our own desires, that we are caught up in sin. Okay, so can you see that now?
It's coming. Here we go. Yep.
So maybe you're there. We endured, and we had animation. Okay, so this is one thing I did want to mention, which goes along with verses 14 and 15 we talked about. The scripture talks about that these are desires that we have. They're our own desires, and that we're carried away by those desires, as was just read. But these desires that we have, a lot of them are God-given desires, which were good when they were created in Genesis chapter 1. And so because we have those physical desires, so we say, well, God, if you gave me these desires, then you are causing me to be tempted, you are causing me to sin. But if we look at those desires, and we have twisted those desires, of course, but if you look at the basic initiation of those desires, they are good. And God has given them an arena in which they are good. Like, God has given us a desire for food. If he didn't, then you would die because you would not eat. Right? He has given us this understanding of survival. Right? Whenever you touch something that's hot, you pull your hand away. Whenever you say, well, I need to work so that I can live, or I don't need to walk out into traffic with my eyes closed. Those are all basic desires that God has given us to be, to survive. and even the sexual desire. God has said, this is good. I have created it. I created it for a specific purpose. In this area, is it to be used and used correctly? Even emotional and mental desires for love and for relationships and for self-worth. But the problem is, when each one of these things are fulfilled outside of the way that God has intended for them to be used. And in fact, I would even say that all of our desires are really to be used in order to glorify God. Whenever we look at those desires as outside of that method of use, is when we start to be carried away and enticed by our own desires. Okay, so 14 and 15 here. First of all, it says, each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. What does that when mean to you?
It's going to happen.
It's not an if, remember. Same thing as chapter 1 and verse 2. Count it all joy when, or consider it all joy when you encounter various trials. Once again, these are not things that are going to happen to some people, not going to happen to other people. This will happen. Temptation does come on every person. If it came on Jesus, right, where Satan used even fleshly desires to tempt Jesus, then we are not greater than our master. So we will also have Satan, you know, putting things before us in order to use our own desires in such a way that would be displeasing to God. Okay? So I am a math person. I'm a nerd. I like math. So I look at this as an equation for sin. And I think I got this from Marty, so you can blame Marty if you don't like math. But in the text right here, see kind of a process that leads to sin, and ultimately what it leads to here is death. And I think that's the most concerning thing. Because of what sin, in its continual state, of course, will lead to. But we have, starting with our own desire, right? And like you said, those desires are really based in things that God has given us. And in certain ways, those desires are acceptable to God. Not just acceptable to God, they're good. But as Solomon says, sometimes we look at those desires and find a way to twist them into something that is not good. And so our desire, which is being twisted a little bit, we use that desire to fulfill something that's not pleasing to God, that's not important to God. When that's paired with an enticement or an opportunity, and you might even substitute in the word a temptation, something that comes before you and says, you can do this, and it would fulfill this desire, and you would receive this high, this pleasure that comes from having this desire and fulfilling it. Here's the opportunity to do it. Okay? Temptation. But then, when the opportunity arises and we have begun with this initial desire, we take action. We say, I'm going to take the opportunity that's in front of us. I want to do it. I have the opportunity to do it. I'm going to do it. Right? And then, that sin leads to growth, which I think is discussing that it's not just this one-time sin. Right? Sin, the scriptures don't show sin as something that just stands alone. We see David sin by going out and looking at a woman to lust after her, inquiring of her, having her brought into, but she is somebody else's wife. Well, he inquires of her, he brings her into his home, he commits adultery with her, she becomes pregnant, then he lies about it, he tries to cover it up, he has her husband killed in battle. That's one sin that continues and continues and continues. And that's the way sin is. It's not just one thing. Sin is something that grows and grows and grows. And the problem with that is that sin and the growth of sin equals death. It brings forth death. Right? Does that equation make sense?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, hopefully it does. It makes sense in my mind, but my mind's strange, so it might not make sense in your mind. Hopefully a little bit more discussion we'll get there. But as we mentioned, God has given us good desires, but we're carried away by the incorrect use of those desires. We implement them in such a way that's not pleasing to God. So we must break this equation of sin, right? And so if you're looking at this equation, if you've made it through, I don't know, 6th or 7th or 8th grade math, I don't know where it is, but if I take one of the things out of this equation, I don't get the same equality on the right-hand side of the equation. I don't get that depth, right? But it's really a chain of things, so these really should be if statements in an Excel spreadsheet or something like that. If desire... get enticement, if desire and enticement, then you get action. If desire, enticement, and action, you get growth, and then equals death. So, but I'm going to work from the right to the left, okay? We have to break the chain of sin, and that needs to be done as soon as possible. But it's possible to do it even at the very end of this equation. Sorry, we're going in reverse. But, so if we have a desire, we are enticed in temptation, and we commit the action of sin, right? 1 John chapter 2 tells us that we have an advocate in the Father. But we have to stop continuing in that action of sin. Every single person has fallen into sin at some point in their life. And if we said, okay, because we have sin, you're dead. There is no option, there is no ability to receive any kind of forgiveness for that sin because you have sin, and that sin equals death. We have an advocate in the Father, we have an advocate in the Son, Christ Jesus, who we can go to and when we have committed sin. But 1 John also talks about that if you continue to practice sin, that's lawlessness, that's evil. But if you practice righteousness, it's not a perfection. But it is a practice. It is a daily practice that happens. Then sin doesn't have an opportunity to grow, to lead to more sin, to become not just something that happened one time and you said, I can't do that, and you move away from it. Instead, it becomes a habit. It becomes your life. And so we can, even after a sin, break it. But I would say that that's not the wise thing to do, to try and wait until that point, because I think what we see is as we move to the left of the equation, the opportunity becomes a little bit easier and has less of a likelihood to progress down the chain of the process the sooner that we start it. So we can, and I say this because I think that it should give us some comfort. God has not just resigned us to one sin and you're done. We should not be looking for the opportunity to sin and receive forgiveness, but there is the possibility. And we see that. We see that when Peter denies Jesus as he is on the cross. And we see that Christ, when he reappears, he gives confidence to Peter to such a point that Peter opens up his mouth in Acts chapter 2 on the day of Pentecost and speaks the truth about Jesus being crucified on the cross, but also the life that he offers in the bringing of the gospel there. But we can also stop at the action, right? So maybe we have a desire. Maybe that desire becomes towards something that is not right. And there's a temptation that comes before us, and we see the temptation clearly in front of us. But we can stop. Temptation does not have to lead us into sin. Because every single person is going to be tempted, but not every person should. We should not be saying, well, if temptation arises, then I have sinned, or then I will sin. That's not true. God helps. 1 Corinthians 10:13 down here says, no temptation has come upon you or overtaken you except such as is common to man. God is faithful. He will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. But with the temptation will also make the way of escape, that you may be able to bear it. Now, if temptation equals sin, then I will be saying,
how can there be an escape if I've already sinned because I've received temptation? Okay? And I say this because there are desires that we have, you know, are possibly looking to use in the wrong way, or we are tempted to use in the wrong way. But if we say, I'm not going to do that in the face of temptation, that's not just the right thing to do, or it's not just the way in which we say, well, we have not sinned, but it's pleasing to God. It's actually the method here in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 15, that God says we should take to stay out of sin, which in growth leads to death. Okay, so, and this is important, I think, because a lot of times temptations come up when you're not expecting it. And you say, oh, I can't believe that this is tempting me. I'm so weak. And in reality, what we should be saying, temptation is before me, but I will not give in to it. I will look for the way of escape that God has given me, and I will take that. Because I don't want that to turn into sin, and sin into growth, and that growth of sin lead to death. So I'm going to cut it off at the action of sin. I will not take that action. But there is also an opportunity to even, many times, be outside of the temptation. I think it's pretty clear to most of us that there are areas or there are places that we could go that we know if I have temptation to be an alcoholic, to drink alcohol, then if I'm invited to a party that I know the basis of that party is everybody to get around and drink, I know that's not a place that I should go because the temptation will be there. Even if I say, well, I can go and I can keep myself from drinking, the temptation will be there. I think something that's frequently on many people's minds when they look through this, because I think it's very clear and it's also something that the scriptures talk about so much, is the sins that come along with the sexual temptation. And I think the process is easy to see here if we look through it. And I'll just use an example of, say, a young man who works at an office, and a young woman is hired. This young man is married, has kids, whatever it may be. A young woman is hired who's attractive. And so he doesn't look and see, this could be a problem if I don't put kind of a boundary around what I should be doing, how I should be acting. And so there's an opportunity for enticement where, you know, spending more time at her desk, talking, laughing, and creating flirtatious environment. An opportunity to go on a business trip where it's just the two of you. And as we start to take those opportunities, we draw closer and closer and closer until we just fall straight into sin. I think that's pretty visible, that you could easily get closer and closer and closer and say, well, I'm not going to sin until you got so close that you say, I just don't know how to get out of this. But the opportunity was there so much earlier to say that I'm going to be very careful about interactions that I have, about the amount of time that I spend, about who else is present whenever I spend time with that woman there. Those are critical things where we have to understand. We can stay out of the arena of temptation many times, but sometimes we're just too prone to say, well, it's not that big of a deal, it's kind of easy, it's what I'm expected to do, and so we get lax and we put ourselves within those temptations.
Hey, Ryan?
Yes, sir.
That's what you've been talking about, the wisdom of the world versus the wisdom from above. Wisdom from above would look at that from that vantage point that I'm not even going to put myself in this situation. I'm going to look at this thing. She's made in the image of God. My first concern is about her soul. So I'm not going to do anything to jeopardize that. The wisdom from the world was, hey, I'm strong enough. It's not a big deal. I can get close to this. I'm strong enough. And before you know it, now you're in this predicament. You're in divorce court. So now, you know, this thing here, but this comes from the wisdom that's from above to use that to not even get to these situations that we find ourselves in.
Right, right. And I would even put in there, too, this is what's expected of me. Right? That's kind of a mentality that, you know, when we say, well, this is just supposed to be professional, and maybe use that for an excuse to act in such a way that puts us so close to sin that we feel like we can't help but fall into it. And I, like I said, I use sexual sin because the scriptures very clearly kind of paint this picture of the problem, the difficulty with sexual sin that is very common. But it's not just that. And I would even say something that's very prevalent right now as well is the temptation of earthly wisdom, where we drive ourselves to the point where we become, quote-unquote, self-sufficient because, you know, God giving us a mind for understanding is a great thing. And the desire to use that mind, God says we should be using it to discern right and wrong, to discern good and evil, to discern the actions that we should be taking. But sometimes I want more. And so there's nothing wrong going to school. There's nothing wrong with getting an additional education. But when I see that desire, it's an opportunity to make myself, I am self-sufficient. I know better. I know more. I have seen people that have, because of earthly wisdom, studied themselves out of a belief in God. Studied themselves out of belief in the truth that God gives. And that started with a desire that was really good, that God has given us, a mind to understand good and evil. But it was used in such a way that was not pleasing to God, and it goes that way. So it's not just sexual sin, even though we use that one quite frequently because it's kind of right there in our face. It's any sin. Any sin takes this. And then the last thing I would say is that we can also, as James mentioned, we have to use our desires in the proper way. And that we're going to get rid of our desires, we really have to get rid of our desires as long as they are in the perspective that God has given them. And God has given them to us for that good purpose. But we have to recalibrate our minds to recognize that those desires should be used to the glory of God, should be used to be pleasing to God in every way. And so we need to change our desire, and that is really the first place that we should be doing. And as James mentioned, if our mindset is to look at someone of the opposite sex as somebody that's made in the image of God, that's changing our desire. Our desire for what we should do for that person is to say, how can I help their soul? How can I strengthen them spiritually? How can I bring growth to them? Or if they're lost, how can I show them the truth? That is a recalibration of our desires in such a way that is glorifying God, pleasing to God. And I would say we should always, always, always be trying to stop the process of sin as early as possible, because it seems like it's almost a bit of a momentum thing. The more momentum it has, the more effort, the more strain, the more struggle it is to stop it, to stop that you know, snowball that's rolling down the hill. Okay, I don't have any clue what time it is. Okay, does anybody have any comments or questions through verse 15 there?
Hey, Ryan.
Yes, sir.
It's interesting in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 15, it kind of shows you what God's role is in terms of the temptation.
Right?
Uh-huh. He's not going to want, he's not going to stop it. It says, who will not allow you to be tempted? So God is allowing that temptation to take place. So God's not going to stop that. He's not going to stop free choice. And He is also providing a way of escape. So, you know, temptation is not something that is, hey, you're tempted and you're going to be just slide down the hill. You can't do anything about it.
Right, right. And I like what you said there, that it is free will. I mean, if God just said there will be no temptation, then effectively God just took our free will away. But He says that God allows it, but He doesn't allow it beyond what you're capable of handling. God is faithful, which is mentioned right there, which I think is pretty important, and we'll actually see kind of that same attitude here in the last couple of verses that we look at. Other comments or questions?
Ryan?
Yes.
This Ronnie.
Ronnie.
I was studying this yesterday and last night, I kept thinking about Adam and Eve, the first who sinned, I mean, the very beginning, and it was real clear what they could and could not do. They were not supposed to eat of that fruit. It's not complicated.
Right.
It addresses, I think, our physical desires and pleasures. He said it was good, it was pleasant to look at.
Right.
It can make me good to eat. It can make us smart like God, know the difference between good and evil.
Right.
And when Satan tempted Eve, she reminded Satan of the rule.
Right.
But he came back at her and twisted it.
Uh-huh.
And then it says she was deceived to believe what he said instead of what God had. So she had the opportunity right at that point, and I don't like to talk like, you know, I'm a perfect model, any of us a perfect model can go through this process, I don't know about daily, but, you know, often. And she should have said, no, Satan, God said I couldn't eat it. We're not going to eat it. Bye. Maybe that's in the dream world, I don't know, because that's not what happened.
Right.
But does that not shed light on the process that's we're going through? If she gave in and ate it, then it went from a lust or a desire to a sin when she bit into that apple or fruit. I always say apple. It makes it pretty clear to me, and then it suffered the consequences of it. It went to the next step, which was spiritual death.
Right.
So yeah, and, I just kept reading that over and over, and then Adam goes, you know, he goes through the same thing. He takes it, and then later he blames his wife for it. And maybe that's a part of the process, too. It makes us feel better, I guess. But anyhow, we can all privately read the story of Adam and Eve, and maybe it'll help.
Right, and it's a good point, too, that they knew what they were supposed to do. It's a good point that Eve even brings it up. But that Satan says, well, look at it from this perspective, right? And that's the twisting of that desire, right? It's, you could be wise. God wants you to be wise, right? That's what we would say today, those kinds of things. But, yeah, stopping at any point along the process. And also, we talk about this in a vacuum sometimes. You just do this, you know. You just stop the temptation. You just stop the desire. You just stop the sin. I'm making no assumptions that this is just easy, because it's not oftentimes. But it's not so hard, as 1 Corinthians 10:13 says here, it's not so hard that you can't overcome that temptation or that difficulty or even that past sin. That you're saying, I'm cutting this off. No more. It's not happening again. I am going to Christ for forgiveness. I'm going to God for forgiveness through the blood of Christ. And I will not be overcome by these temptations any longer in my life. In fact, I'm going to find a way to stay out of those temptations as best I can, and to redirect my desire to say, my desire is to be pleasing to God in all things. Okay, just for the sake of finishing the text, let's go ahead and somebody, if you would, read verses 16 through 18 so we can wrap that up as well.
Do not be my beloved brethren, every good thing given and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shifting shadow. In the exercise of his will, he brought us forth by the word of truth, so that we would be a kind of first fruits among his creatures. This you know.
Okay, so if we're looking at this in context of what we just read, he says, do not be deceived. Don't blame God. Right? Don't be deceived about who God is. Don't be deceived about what God is doing. God is not calling you to be tempted. Your temptation really comes from the twisting of the desires that God gave you, but they're your own desires. They're within you that you are deciding to do things that are contrary to what God has said. But the verses here, really, he's saying, let me give you who God is. James is saying, let me redirect your mind. If you are thinking God is tempting me because he's putting me in these situations, no, we need to change our mentality and see how perfect he really is. Right? Verse 17, every good and every perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. So, things that are mentioned here, And we're kind of maybe working a little bit backwards, but just that God has no variation or shadow of turning, because God is the Father of life. Okay, so we change day to day. Like, our mind is very, very up and down. God is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And that's great for a lot of reasons. One reason is that the standard that God has made, it's not changing. We don't have to figure out based on what the culture around us is saying, what we should and shouldn't be doing. We don't have to figure out a new way to please God every decade, every 100 years. We don't even have to figure out what are really the blessings from God and what are not the blessings of God. Those things haven't changed. We also don't have to wonder, is God faithful today like he was 2,000 years ago, or 2,500 years ago, or 6,000 years ago? God is faithful and has always been faithful. God has given a set of standards, and those standards are not changing. And God continues to give good and perfect gifts. I'm not 100% sure about this Father of Life, who is in there, no variation or shadow of turning. 1 John 1:5 says that God is life, which would indicate that he's also the Father of Life. Right? Light came into the world as the Son of God in John chapter 1. But also, if a light is there and it's in a fixed point, or even if it has the same pattern like the sun does every single day, and you put things under that light, and it creates shadows, and those shadows move all over the place. Because those shadows are moving, do we look at the sun and say, well, the sun isn't faithful to come up every day because these shadows are moving all over the place? We don't say that. We recognize the sun is where it is because it's the pattern that God has set before it. God has given the word that no person could be cleansed from sin without the gospel. Romans would teach us that sin is in everyone has sinned. The wages of sin is death. But there again in Romans 6:23, the free gift of God is eternal life in Christ Jesus. Okay, so I just got a text that the second bell rang and I can't hear it. Thanks guys for being patient, and we'll maybe run back through this one.